You are listening to an edited version of Get Radio's Business Brunch, which airs every Sunday at 11 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio across Oxfordshire and online at getradio.co.uk. For copyright reasons, we cannot play the songs mentioned in the show. But for more info and Business Brunch related content, head over to getradio.co.uk.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson, sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. The friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Discover our membership packages to help you grow your business at obcn.co.uk.
Good morning, this is Get Radio. Welcome to the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson, owner of Thompson & Terry Recruitment. Every week, I am so fortunate to share the stories, the expertise and the knowledge of business leaders large and small with you, the listener. And this week is going to be no different. On today's show, we're joined by Yellow Submarine and Sophie Bradley, who's really going to be sharing the story of the world of charity, her own story, and also give you an insight to a wonderful Oxfordshire-based charity who do some amazing work. This is the Business Brunch with me, Ben Thompson. I really look forward to introducing Sophie after this. Get Radio. Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, today we're joined by Sophie Bradley of Yellow Submarine. Welcome, Sophie.
Hi.
So, Sophie, thanks so much for joining us. For those who don't know you, and indeed don't know Yellow Submarine, please introduce yourself.
So I'm Sophie. I'm the enterprise manager at Yellow Submarine, which means I look after all of the enterprise projects. So we are an Oxfordshire-based charity. We started in 2009, and we started out providing respite holidays for adults with learning disabilities. And so the team consisted of a couple of people and one minibus. We're now in our 16th year. And so I joined the charity in 2013. When we opened our first cafe in Oxford. And the purpose of the cafe was that the people that we had been taking on holiday, that the organisation were working with, didn't always have that much to do to fill a day that was meaningful. You know, there was kind of day centres available or carers maybe coming into shared houses and things like that to kind of keep people busy. But there was this real void of a need for some help for some of these young people to be able to just have a boost and a bit of support to be able to be ready for work. And there was a desire from these young people to work. So our first cafe was opened with the goal of kind of doing something to fill that gap somewhat. And I think obviously that was now 12 years ago. I was going to say 10 years ago. It was nearly 12 years ago. It's 2013. Since then, you know, we're in such a better position now across the whole county. There are, you know, social enterprise is now a word that people recognize. It's something that isn't such an abstract thing. So we have grown since then. We obviously had COVID where we kind of diverse what we did. But we now are a charity. So the respite holidays still happen. We have a whole program of activities for children from the age of 11. And we run two social enterprise cafes that are open full time. We run a pop-up cafe in the summer over at Woodstock. And we run Life Changing Bakes, which is our kind of bakery and kind of catering skills program. So we've kind of expanded in all sorts of directions. And we now support hundreds and hundreds of young people and adults with learning disabilities and autism across Oxfordshire.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that introduction. I think that there's going to be a lot of people that are listening at home with their notepad for advice over the next hour and insight into such a wonderful charity. But before that, the most difficult question we often ask our guests is a song choice. It always makes you feel like a DJ on the radio, doesn't it? But you have kindly chosen a song for our listeners this morning. What is your song choice and why have you picked it?
I mean, there is only one, isn't there? It has to be Yellow Submarine by the Beatles. It is a song that so at Yellow Submarine, our members love a party. So at certain points in the year, we have a Christmas party, we have a summer party, we have a cafe awards, which celebrates all of our cafe trainees. And every Yellow Submarine event is not complete without the Yellow Submarine song. And we actually have a dance, which I will take some credit for. Which, it's the kind of dance, your 2-year-old could join in, your granny can join in, it's not hard. But yeah, it brings everybody together. And even now, if my daughter hears this Yellow Submarine song, it's Yellow Submarine. I think it sums us up extremely well. And it's actually why we are called Yellow Submarine. Lots of people always want to know this. Well, why is that? Why the name? But so the charity who, our founder, Toby, had an uncle called Max who had Down syndrome. And Yellow Submarine was his favorite song, and so that's where our name comes from. So
Oxfordshire Station, Get Radio.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. Following that very fitting song chosen by Sophie, we've heard all about the charity Yellow Submarine and also the history of the name of Yellow Submarine, which is a very, very good song. And today we are going to be talking all about charity. Really keen to learn more about Sophie's role, but also really give an insight into the amazing work that they do. Sophie, I'm going to start with quite a big, broad story. I think that it's been a turbulent time for the world. There's been COVID and Brexit and the recent budget. How is the world of charities and how are things at Yellow Submarine?
Now more than ever, the work that charities like Yellow Submarine and others do is so vital. You mentioned the budget, when every service is being cut and everything is stretched to its absolute limit, there isn't enough support to go around everybody that needs it. And that is where, charities like us have to be able to fill that gap. It means that we have waiting lists. It means that our training program is oversubscribed. It means that our young people's projects have more people needing to use them than we can possibly manage. So I think it's definitely a really challenging time. I think we aren't unaffected by rising costs as well. Obviously, we run food businesses. The cost of our bread has gone up by about 60% in 2 years. That's a huge, huge hit for us. And, like every other hospitality business, we are facing those challenges. We found recruitment since Brexit. We used to have a much wider pool of people that had experience in catering or cafes or care, and all of those industries have been hit by the lack of staff. It's tough, but I think the charity that we are, it's kind of this spirit and this quite unique situation where there's always hope and there's always a desire to do more and to not go, okay, this is really hard, so I think we'll stop, or this is really hard, so we'll not do that anymore. Like, this is really hard, so we're going to work even harder to make it continue to happen and to grow it. Our goal is to expand and to get bigger, because we can't not do what we're doing.
Absolutely. And it really is. It really does make you think. As a lot of the regular listeners know, I run a recruitment business, and I think that if you work in, let's use sales as a really great example, you of course you've got pressure to hit your targets, and then you may get commission if you sell. But I think that if you work in the world of charity, you may have those similar financial pressures, but then of course you have that pressure in terms of, if you don't bring enough money in, you're not able to help those service users as well, which I always think is a very, very different dynamic. Just in terms of something you touched on there, in terms of that waiting list for people that need your services and want your services, just so I and the listeners understand, is the reason behind that waiting list is due to funding and resource, e.g. if you had double the amount of money, I appreciate it's not quite as simple as this, you would be able to help double the amount of people, and very much as a result of the economy and donations and support from government, etc., there just isn't that resource at this minute in time. Have I understood that correctly, albeit I've made it sound very simple?
Yeah, potentially, yes. Our biggest cost is our staff team. To run an activity day, whether it's taking some children to a swimming pool or to Cadbury's World, what we need to make that day happen is the staff to run it and to keep those children safe. And likewise in the cafes, if we don't have people here that can keep our trainees safe and to train them, we can't, you know, we can't do that. So I think, yes, ultimately, if someone was, and if anyone is listening, would like to make a very large donation, we could do more if we had more resource, because it's just not possible. You know, without that, we have to pay the staff to keep everybody safe and to do what we do. And yeah, ultimately, it does come down to that. We're very fortunate at Yellow Submarine that there is a very large group of volunteers.
Amazing.
Really step in and help, especially with our school holiday activities and our residential trips. And we're so lucky to have a really great team of volunteers that support those things, because without them, we wouldn't be able to do as much as we do now.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And just in terms of that piece, I think there's three arms to staff for a charity, isn't there? There's volunteers, there's employees, and then there's the trustee piece. And I think that we talk to a lot of people through this show and through my business who would like to get involved in a charity. Can you just give your own perspective in terms of what are the real benefits, and what are some of the things you should consider before changing your career to work for a charity, or becoming a trustee, or volunteering your time? What are some of the things to consider?
They're three quite different things there. So I suppose I can personally say, being a member of staff in a charity, you know, we're not making loads of money. We do the jobs that we do, and we have a team here at Yellow Submarine that have all been here quite a long time, and you do what you do because you love what you're doing. And you see the reward is in seeing somebody make progress, or, you know, seeing somebody who, when they start, can't step out of the kitchen door, they're too anxious to being able to serve a queue of customers at the till. And I think, you know, for this to be your full-time job, the reward is so much greater than the financial reward that, you know, comes each month in your pay packet. I think to volunteer time, if you have spare time, why not? You know, I think you get to kind of dip in and out of something. There's less responsibility, obviously, if you're coming along as a volunteer. You might be paired with somebody with relatively low level of need, or, you know, if someone's a volunteer, we try and give them the nicer jobs. probably not going to be asked to clean the toilets. So, I think the joy that you can experience by just coming along and volunteering your time and knowing that you have helped to support something to happen, I think is, you can't measure that. And then in terms of trustees, obviously the trustees are volunteers. They volunteer their time, they volunteer their expertise, and charities couldn't run without them. We're really, really fortunate. We have an amazing team of trustees. Actually, the chair of our trustees is Toby, who founded Yellow Submarine.
Amazing.
And so, you know, it sounds a bit of a cliche, but we kind of refer to Yellow Submarine, it's your family. This is your Yellow Submarine family, and it has that feel, you know, with the kind of senior leadership all the way through to the junior staff. It is a collective, and it's a team. And I think the trustees and the insights they bring and the guidance that they offer, if you have a background, at the minute we are actually looking for a treasurer. You know, so someone with a background in finance, you know, that's something that isn't going to take up a huge amount of time, but actually is really, really vital to the running and the operational side of the charity.
No, absolutely. No, really, really good insight. Really, really good insight. And just coming on one step, really, about your role, because you've got a very interesting job title. Where do you fit into the charity, and what's your background? Like, how did your entrance to the charity come about?
So not many people know this. I probably shouldn't say it on a radio show. I applied for a job at Yellow Submarine because I had just moved to Oxford. I was new to the area, and I'd worked in a cafe before. So it was advertised as a cafe job. And I thought, oh, yeah, I can do that. I can make coffee. and applied. And I remember coming to the interview at Yellow Submarine and thinking, wow, like, this is not just a cafe. This is something really special. And I was quite persistent, and I kept phoning because I really wanted the job. And I got it. So I joined as a barista in the Oxford Cafe. Amazing. So the cafe had just opened. It was really new. The team was really new. At that time, there was no real structure to how, you know, there was this desire to train and to help people, but there was no real plan. So my background before that had been in hospitality. And so yeah, I joined to make coffee. And then as the years have gone by, my job has very much grown as the charity has grown and evolved. I kind of led a little while. I had some maternity leave, my son was born, and that gave actually a bit of time out of the cafe to really focus on what did we want to train and teach. And we kind of worked collectively and put a program together, and we then partnered with a college, so we now our academic training kind of slotted in to a qualification that already existed. And as each year has gone, the team has got bigger, and we now have somebody whose, you know, job is managing that traineeship program because it's grown much bigger. And we opened our cafe in Whitney in 2015. So by that time, I moved over and managed the Whitney Cafe for a few years. And then COVID hit, and the whole charity really, really changed. Some changes in, you know, in people. COVID was a bit of a restructure for families, wasn't it, as well as businesses and charities. So people came and went, and we had to have our cafes closed for such a long time. Obviously, the people that we work with, lots of them were medically vulnerable, so had to stay at home even when we could open. Our cafe in Whitney is in a leisure centre, which were actually one of the last places to be reopened as the world was gradually reopened. Absolutely. So we couldn't do what we needed to. So that kind of led us into this path of we'd started to bake our own cakes in 2019, because I was getting very frustrated with buying in these cakes that they weren't that nice. They were often broken. And I was like, I know it's a bit of a personal hobby of mine anyway. I know we can bake a lot better than we can be buying. And actually, some of our trainees were so interested in taking part with that, that we actually used to run on a Sunday. Like, it was like a baking club. So they would come in, amazing, we would all bake together, and that was our cakes for the week. Obviously that had to stop, but what we'd started, the kind of ball had started rolling down that path, and what we were making was good, and we could see a real benefit to it. So actually during the second lockdown we had, I created a website, an online shop, a lot of YouTube tutorials. How do you do this? What does this mean? IT was never my thing. Anyone that knows me, you know, would be able to say she can barely log into a Zoom call. not my thing at all. But, you know, it was a situation like, okay, we have to do something. We have to make this work. So we created an online shop. We were able to bake because one person could work on their own. Or we could socially distance, you know, we could make it work. And we started to sell our cakes online. And that meant that actually the response was huge, because the customers that were coming into the cafe felt they could actually continue to support us by ordering things online. People couldn't visit their mum or their granny, so they were posting things to each other. And it meant that our trainees could get involved. We could do an online baking lesson. So we share the recipe in advance and they could all bake that thing together. So we were able to kind of bring everyone together without actually being able to be in the same room as each other. So yeah, my job has very much evolved and changed. And so I'm called, I think, Enterprise Development Manager, but essentially I look after, and this is how I can only best explain, I look after the cafes, the staff, the trainees, the training program, the baking, you know, all the fun health and safety and the EHO and the tills. And I make sure all of that runs smoothly and that everyone is safe and that things are continuing to progress. So
amazing. Amazing. What a story. time for a song, and then we'll continue the conversation after this.
Get Radio's Business Brunch with Ben Thompson. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network. Our business breakfasts start from just £15. Find out more at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. If you are just tuning in, we're joined by Sophie Bradley of Yellow Submarine, who are an Oxfordshire-based charity who just do such amazing work across the county, which we've heard lots about already, and two more parts to continue learning more. So Sophie, we were talking a little bit before about your career journey. We've spoken about the challenges of the charity, and I'm really keen to now understand decision-making processes, if that's okay, which I think is always a big decision in any organisation, isn't it? But I think that the decision to go online, as you touched on before the break, or the decision to open another cafe, or to sign a new lease, or to hire a new person, can be tough. So what does the decision-making process look like in a charity? And who's involved in decision-making?
And on the size of the decision, I suppose. There are day-to-day things. So each project has its manager. So somebody oversees our children's projects, someone oversees our adults' projects, each cafe has its own manager. So those day-to-day decisions are made at that level. You know, the big things like, are we going to sign a lease for this building, has to be agreed by many more people. So obviously we have two co-directors who oversee the whole charity collectively. So all of those big decisions would be made in agreement with them. And then the really big stuff has to go to our board of trustees, and they would have to get on board. They're quite a friendly bunch. And they tend to say yes, as long as we can present an answer to all of their questions. But we are only ever led by what we need, you know, what are the needs of our members, what are the needs of our trainees, and we are always guided into those decisions by, you know, the desire to meet the need that they have. We're limited in decision making sometimes because we're sometimes reliant on certain funding, so we have to maybe delay things, and then you know how things go, especially like property. We've had a whirlwind of an experience. We're hopefully getting somewhere, but I don't want to tempt fate and share what that might be. But yeah, I think that there can be a lot of frustration. As a charity, you know, we're not always in a position like a regular business might be to say, fine, we've got this much money in the bank, so we'll just use that. And you know, we have to be really certain if we were to commit money to something that was then didn't work, the impact that has had isn't just on someone's bank balance, it's on the lives of the people that we're working with. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of people involved with any big decision, because we have to really safeguard the charity's resources and a reputation and really be sure that we're doing what's right.
No, absolutely. Let's go back to people, if that's okay. And let's talk about the traineeship program, because I think that's really, really key. But I want to go one step before that, if that's okay, mm-hmm. and really talk about some of the challenges that your service users or members may have, and really how did the traineeship program come about, and then what is the traineeship program? We can do that. That's lots of questions in one, Sophie. So apologies in advance.
So I'll do what are their challenges first.
Yeah,
so
please. Thank you.
Most people that come to the traineeship, we say we're kind of like a final stepping stone. So once education is coming to an end and a young person is starting to think about adulthood or employment or independent living, we're the kind of final bridge between those two stages of a person's life. You know, obviously we're training for work skills and employment, but it's so much more than that. You know, it's becoming an adult and becoming more independent and confident. So I think a lot of, if our traineeship didn't exist, I think there would be a large cohort of young people that want to work and can work, but aren't able to go to an interview like you or I might go to and say, here's my CV and I would like this job, and for that to be a successful experience. So we have lots of young people who academically achieve really, really well at school, or have had things in place to enable them to achieve, you know, their full potential within the educational setting, but they perhaps don't have the confidence, or they don't have the social skills to be able to walk into a room of people that they don't know, or to be able to make eye contact during a conversation. And I think what we're here to really do is to bring out the absolute best that person has to offer, and we really, really find out what are they good at. You know, we often, less so these days I would say, but we would often be presented with a big list from either a college or a school, or sometimes even a parent or a carer, and say, okay, these are the things this child cannot do. They can't hold scissors, and they can't do this, and they can't do that. And we'll glance at it and say thank you very much, but honestly what we do is we want to find out that for ourselves. We will get to know this person, because we often find when they're in a new environment and the expectation is different, that what they're able to achieve can start to shift and really progress. So we're not too interested in the what you can't do or what you've been told you can't do before. We're really here to find out what you can do. And then, I suppose that leads into how the traineeship works. So it's an 18-month program. We split it into two phases. So phase one is a year. Phase two is 6 months. And during phase one, it's a real kind of getting stuck in, learning what is involved with having a job. So whilst we are two cafes, the rest of the kind of stuff around being ready for work is what we are here to teach, you know, being on time, working to a rota, wearing a uniform, being clean and presentable for work. There is so much around being ready for work than being able to actually do the tasks that you've been asked to do. Phase one is a year, and we cover loads of different aspects of work in itself. And we try and take a kind of holistic approach. So we would really encourage anybody that is on the traineeship to come along to a Yellow Submarine social activity too, because then, you know, that sense of teamwork and getting to know people, we believe that it is the whole person. You know, you can't just focus on one thing. And then there is no kind of set in stone. You will progress to phase two. Phase two isn't a given. So the trainee has to be able to achieve, you know, has to have committed to the program itself, which can be a challenge sometimes. And then phase two is much more focused on preparing that person for work elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So we always say we never keep any of our trainees, because then we wouldn't have space for more to come and go. We're a transitional program. Mm-hmm. And so 6 months is much more focused on exploring what other jobs are out there, kind of identifying skills, because after a year of working with somebody, we really know what they can do and what they're good at. And we work with the young person on putting together something called an employability passport. So it has on there, these are the things that I can do. These are things I can do independently. Here are some of the things that I find challenging, but also here are some ways in which this can be made easier for me. So kind of reasonable adjustments an employer can make to make, you know, that person's chances at a job being successful, you know, as sure as possible. So, and then we have a member of the team who works on kind of, I call it matchmaking. I don't think she'd call it matching people, our young people, to suitable jobs. Because the last thing we want is a young person to leave Yellow Submarine with a paid job and everyone's great, and then 2 months later, it's all fallen apart. So, you know, a lot of time is spent working with employers. We offer training to companies on what it's like to employ someone with neurodiversity and what adjustments you might be able to make. Because I think we found over the years, people want to do something they want, then they mean well, and they want to be able to help, but they don't always have the understanding of how. I think unless you have a lived experience of working with somebody with a learning disability or with autism, you just, and there's a little layer of fear because it's just an unknown thing. So we try and just break down all of those barriers and offer as much support to the employer as we can to say, okay, this is how this person might present themselves, and this is what might be going on for them, or this is how you might be able to tackle this. And it's really hard because there is no rule book. There is each person is completely individual, and on each different day of the week, that person might be facing different challenges. So it is really, really hard to say, okay, if this person has this disability, this is what you need to do, because it just isn't that straightforward. These are people. So yeah, the traineeship program is hands-on, it's training. Our trainees all complete a qualification while they're with us in employability. And alongside that, most of them also do food hygiene. So, you know, we have to be realistic too. There are a lot of jobs and vacancies in the catering and hospitality industry. So if we can prepare our trainees for those jobs, whether it's front of house roles or kitchen porter roles or, you know, junior chefs, whatever that might be, if we can equip them with as many tools as we can to help them get into that job, and we can get the employer on board and say, this is what this person can bring to your organisation, then... yeah, it's win-win, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. Sophie, this is just so fascinating. Thank you. Thank you for being so open and sharing such an insight into such a wonderful, wonderful local charity. So thank you for that. Let's have another song and we'll continue the conversation after this.
Discussing topics that impact local businesses and their owners, this is the Business Brunch. Sponsored by the Oxford Business Community Network, the friendly, no-pressure networking group for Oxfordshire's business people. Sign up to our mailing list at obcn.co.uk.
Welcome back to the Business Brunch here on Get Radio. I think Sophie is beating the powers that be at Get Radio with her song choice. It's definitely the best of the morning so far. So pull your socks up, Get Radio. But in all seriousness, if you are just tuning in, we're joined by Sophie Bradley of Yellow Submarine. Today, we've spoken a lot about really the story behind Yellow Submarine, some of the challenges they have, but also really the innovation that they're providing and such a great service that they're providing to so many people across Oxfordshire. What I'm really keen to build on is employers, if that's okay. We've spoken a lot about your traineeship program and getting those people ready for employment, and you spoke before a little bit about the catering sector in terms of kitchen porters or front of house or trainee chefs. I guess what would be quite good to build on is really if an employer is listening, whether they be in catering or hospitality or a completely different sector, what are some of the things they should consider, and how should they go about finding out more about the possibility of employing one of your graduates?
So I think if they want to know anything at all, we are an open book. We have two shop fronts. You know, we're in Oxford, we're in Whitney, and if anyone was to come in and say, "I'm an employer and I'm interested in what you do," we would, you know, very happily make the time to connect with them. Or, you know, via our website, by emails and things, because, you know, that is a huge challenge. I think employers, I think, yeah, we touched on it slightly before, often mean well, but I think something that can really hold our trainees back is something as simple as the interview process. You know, so I think if employers are able to open their minds to doing things in slightly different ways, we never say to somebody, okay, we think you should lower your standard, or you should expect that this person will do less of the job, or, you know, at the end of the day, everyone is running businesses and they need efficient staff. But I think to kind of, instead of seeing what somebody can't do, to be able to open their minds to what they can do and what they can actually bring. I think we've got a really good example that's kind of gets across what I'm trying to say. So I'm not saying it was. So we had a young man working, training in our Whitney Cafe, and he was very, very thorough, but did things very, very slowly. And he lived out in a countryside village. Anyway, there was a restaurant nearby that are owned by quite a big company now. And we took him along and they offered him just some work experience. You know, sometimes that is really the best way in for our trainees. An application form or, you know, a big interview often doesn't go well. Whereas actually, if we can bring our trainees along for a week or for 2 weeks, we can support them to come and to travel and to do all of those things and figure all of that out. And then if an employer can actually see that person, you know, starting off with one or two tasks and then gradually maybe increasing that to see what else they might be able to do, if they're able to come along and to show what they're capable of. And that's what happened with this particular young man. So he went along and he did some work experience, and he was an extremely friendly, smiley, likable young man. And everybody at this restaurant instantly warmed to him. And what they did, they really worked with us on carving a role for him. So it was a couple of hours on a couple of days a week. So in the grand scheme of things, you know, the cost to their business was very, very small. And he was given specific jobs that had to be done really thoroughly, that everyone else, they were like, yeah, they're just kind of rushing and they're maybe not doing this quite well. And actually, you know, he was amazing at being extremely thorough. And what they found, because we always keep in touch with the employers, we keep in touch with the trainees, they said what the impact that employing him had had on the rest of their team was really unexpected. They had people that were, you know, others working in the restaurant that had come forward and said, oh, actually, yeah, I used to actually really struggle with this at school, and it made their I have ADHD and had never felt able to talk about it before, and it really opened their team to being accepting of their own differences, because they were witnessing somebody that had, you know, visible learning differences come in and work alongside them. And I think that seems like a really good example of how the benefit that employing somebody that may not be neurotypical in your team can have, and they are able to contribute so much. And I think if employers were able to focus on that and be open-minded to how perhaps the induction process, you know, sometimes we've taken trainees along to work experience and they're presented with a 5-hour online course or, you know, really complicated health and safety questionnaires, and you know, we're not saying that person doesn't need to learn that information, but let us work with you or open your minds as to how can you possibly adapt that, or how can you present that in a way that is accessible so that this person can achieve it. Because if that is a barrier to them being able to go and, I don't know, work in a warehouse packing books, that's crazy, because they will be a hard worker and they will be reliable and all of these things. You know, if you work in recruitment, I'm sure you're well used to this, you know, staff that don't turn up, or they're phoning in sick every 5 minutes, or, you know, those challenges are, we've done all of that. We iron all of that out. We work with these people for 18 months and we would only present a trainee to an employer that is going to be suitable for that job. And I think, yeah, if employers were able to kind of open their mind, allow us in, you know, let us come in and guide you and train the staff and just remove this fear of, well, what might that look like, or what does that mean? Because, yeah, hospitality and catering is only one area. I mean, lots of our trainees go on and work in completely different sectors. We have one young man who went off to work at Oxford University Press because he was absolutely, you know, his specialist subject was languages. And he was actually amazing at lots and lots of languages. And the skill that he had was being held back by his fear of just communicating with people and working in a team. So he had the chance to learn that with us, and now is a really, really valuable employee. And so, you know, it's not always a cognitive delay. It might just be a barrier of being able to communicate or you travel. You know, if somebody lives in a countryside village and they don't know how to take a bus, you know, something we do with all of our trainees is travel training, because then if that's just the door that needs to be unlocked for them to be able to get out there and work, then yeah, that's what we'll do.
Absolutely. And I think really it's about creating that win-win, isn't it? It's about working, really making sure that it works for all parties. And I think that's one of the most often forgotten things in the world of recruitment. So we are coming to the final stint of the show. And I know we did touch on this earlier in the show, but I think that a lot of people listening at home will have been really inspired by some of the things you've spoken about and some of the amazing work that you're doing. So if somebody is listening and they think, do you know what, this sounds like an amazing charity, I want to support in some way, or I want to learn more, or I want to do more, what's your advice? How can they go about that?
I think the easiest way you can possibly support us is to come into the cafe and buy a coffee. Because you're enabling a trainee to have a practice on the till, you're enabling a different trainee to practice using the coffee machine, you're enabling someone else to practice carrying a tray of drinks. You know, we can't train our trainees without real customers to serve and food to make and drinks to make. So I think and you as the customer get the benefit of enjoy, you know, we are number one on TripAdvisor in Oxford for our coffees. We really pride ourselves on being high quality cafe. You know, we never ever rest on the fact that, oh, well, what we do is great, so people will come because of that. That's never going to be enough. You know, there is tough competition out there these days. You know, cafes, coffee shops, we have to be meeting the standard and meeting the expectations of customers. And what we love is when a customer comes in and they say, oh, the coffee's great. Oh, wow. And then they realise what else is going on there. So, yeah, the easiest way anyone could possibly support us is to either come into one of our cafes or to use our online shop to buy some of the cakes or biscuits that our trainees are helping to make, because they're also delicious. or, you know, people that want to maybe commit more than that can volunteer. So we're always looking for volunteers to help, less so in the cafes, but with our children's projects or our adults activities. And there is loads of volunteering opportunities there, or, you know, a donation. There is no amount that doesn't help. You know, if someone had thought, instead of buying my £4 flat white today, I'm going to donate it to Yellow Submarine. You know, all of those tiny donations across a year really, really build up. So
amazing. Amazing. Perfect. If you are listening at home and you are able to support, I encourage you to do so. I think so often we all have the best intentions and things get forgotten. Do that if you're able. My final question, Sophie, is one that we like to often end shows with, which is a top tip. It doesn't need to be something fresh because you've been giving tips across the whole show. But it could be something I have not asked about. But if you are the Oxfordshire business owner listening at home or listening in their office right now and you wanted to give them one takeaway top tip, what would be that takeaway tip?
Really tough. I would say something we always come down to at Yellow Submarine is, however hard, you know, a day might have been, or however tough things are, or, you know, I think if everyone could be kind, then I think, you know, whether that's in work or on the bus home, I think my top tip would be, if we can just, yeah, remember to be kind to each other, that goes a really long way.
Amazing. Thank you so much. But that is the end of the show. So next week, we are going to be back with some brand new guests talking about topics impacting on local business. But for now, thank you. Thank you, Sophie, for joining us. And if you are just tuning in, we've been joined by Sophie Bradley of Yellow Submarine. And I definitely recommend following their amazing work. Just a reminder, you can listen to this radio show on the radio and online every Sunday at 11 a.m. There is also a podcast version, which is available via every major podcast platform and is released on the Monday morning. And do look out for the video format so you can see my lovely guests on the Get Radio Facebook page and their website every Tuesday. But for now, whatever you're doing in Oxfordshire, enjoy, and we'll see you next week.